I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer online one-on-one sessions, packages, and online courses for the conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me, and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Lauren. Lauren is a mama of two from the Gold Coast, Australia. She is Australia's first professional Instagrammer. And before she became a mama, she worked as a full-time travel influencer and speaker. Today, she is the co-founder of Makia the Baby Journal, a digital baby journal designed for parents to use to document their journey to parenthood. In this episode, Lauren shares about how she became pregnant the first time at 37 after just trying being off the pill for 3 months with her husband in Zimbabwe, and how she became pregnant the second time in her 40s on the first try. Becoming pregnant as an older mama wasn't an issue for her. However, having her natural birth the first time was. She ended up having a medicalized and traumatic birth with her first, which she didn't really heal up until the weeks before birthing her second. And it was really through having a physiological birth at home that she really did heal and wake up to the strength she holds as a woman in her feminine power. The euphoria and high she was on after birth is not comparable to anything else she's ever experienced. And she has experienced some amazing things on her travels. And in this episode, you get to hear about her full journey to this moment. Curious about Lauren? Find her on Instagram as Lauren EP Bath. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Yay! It's my birthday tomorrow. I turn 37. It's crazy to think I'm already 37. I felt like I just turned 30. Time is speeding up and there is no time to waste. Not living your best life. In celebration of me, I am offering you a 37% off my already discounted bundle. The bundle includes the Natural Birth course, the Nourishing Postpartum course, and my beloved Village community. You get access to all of this, which is already heavily discounted as a bundle, with an extra discount of 37%. The bundle is all that you need in order to optimize your chances of having a natural birth and healing, nourishing postpartum as well. And you get to hang out with me and my rad sisters inside the Maiden, Mother, and MAGA Village for a whole year. It would be the greatest gift for me to see you in there. I hang out in my village and share almost every day. It's super addictive in a very positive way in how loving, inspiring, and supportive the sisterhood is in there. So don't miss out. It's only available for this discount for this week. Pop on over to thenaturalbirthcourse.com and use the code ANNA37 in capital letters at the checkout to get 37% off the bundle. That is ANNA37 in capital letters at the checkout for the bundle for 37% off. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. This episode is sponsored by my favorite women's health supplement brand, Needed. I'm so grateful to finally have found a supplement brand that I trust and that I can recommend to my clients who are seeking assistance in fertility and conception, as well as for pregnancy and postpartum support. Most vitamins on the market are just expensive pee, and I love that Needed's products are bioavailable and come in forms that your body can easily absorb and at optimal levels, not just the bare minimum. I take Needed supplements myself. For example, in my morning cacao, I use their collagen from organic grass-fed cows, as well as their immune-supporting powder, including elderberry, zinc, and pre- and postbiotic powder. It's delicious, and I feel amazing using it. If you want to optimize your health, then I invite you to pop on over to thisisneeded.com via the link in the show notes, which gives you automatic discounts on their website with the coupon code THENATURALBIRTHPODCAST. Hi, Lauren, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. So you live actually close to where I used to live in Australia. You're up in the Gold Coast. I was down in the Byron Shire, not too far away, you know, almost neighbors there. And you're here to tell about your two birth stories, the first being what you experienced as a traumatic birth, and then going on to moving into a different kind of birth the second time, which we will kind of dive deeper into today. But before we do, let's just start with, you know, you becoming pregnant the first time, kind of a bit of a summary of that first birth and the takeaways, the gems from that as we move on into your natural empowering birth after.
Okay. So I was actually working full time as a travel photographer and influencer before I fell pregnant, which is basically the dream career. I think it was an incredible way to live and to work. And I also didn't really think I wanted children back then. I had a great life. I had a great career. I've been with my partner for a long time, though, and I always knew that he wanted children. And my husband is Zimbabwean, and he comes from a family of seven. And I was getting to the age where it's crunch time. You have to start really thinking about these things. And ultimately, not just for him, but for myself as well. But I did decide that, you know, I wanted to actually lean in and experience all that life has to offer. You know, I really felt like that was a huge part of life that I would be missing out on if I didn't lean into that. So my husband and I...
Can I ask what age you were when you felt there was the crunch time? Just for anyone listening who thinks, you know...
37.
Yeah. 37. Okay, cool. Yeah.
37 when I started to think about it.
That's a good crunch time for sure.
Right? No,
yeah.
It was no spring chicken.
Yeah, no.
But I know that it's very common to have children later in life, but I also know that fertility is a fact. You know, your fertility does drop as you get older. And I knew that. And I knew that if I wanted to give it my best shot, I would have to start, you know, really thinking about it. And I didn't really want to have to go down the IVF route, as amazing as the technology is. I think I knew for myself that that would be too stressful. And I don't know. I just instinctively knew that that probably wouldn't be my journey. So I wanted to just do it naturally if I could. And if it didn't happen for me, I was pretty prepared to let that go and let it be what it was. Or so I thought. That's where I was kind of at the time. So I, you know, my husband and I, we talked about it and we had a bit of a timeline in mind. And then I got this amazing opportunity to go to Antarctica and they, I know the dream job for a photographer. So that kind of pushed the timeline back by 6 months because they said if I were pregnant when I was down there, they wouldn't be able to take me on the ship. So I actually used that trip as an excuse to go off my contraceptive pill. And that was right at the start of 2019. So I took my last contraceptive pill when I was here in Australia, took off to Chile to get down to Ushuaia to cruise down to Antarctica. And when I came back from that trip, which was really amazing and beautiful, as you would imagine, when I came back from that trip, I had a pretty full-on schedule. And one of the things that I had planned was to get over to Zimbabwe. I was running some photography tours over there. And while we were over there, on the day that the second tour ended, actually, I fell pregnant that day. So it was, I think, 3 months after I'd gone off the contraceptive pill. So I was very, very fortunate. However, I was in my husband's family home and three of his brother's wives had newborn babies and I was just surrounded with babies and oxytocin and breastfeeding mamas and just so much love and joy. And these, you know, these kids were around all the time. I was holding, like, there's photos of me on the day I fell pregnant, on the day I conceived, like cuddling all the babies. And I think it was just... It was just perfect timing, really, to be surrounded by all of that. And I think that really helped me hormonally to fall pregnant.
Definitely. Well, the sun as well, like being in sunshine, being with family, being in that, absolutely, in that love bubble. And what a fertility tip. Just surround yourself with babies.
Literally, just cuddle all the babies.
Yes. Love that. Okay, so you felt pregnant in Zimbabwe and then you went back to Australia.
I went back to Australia for about 2 days and then my husband and I turned around and went to Canada. We had a holiday that was planned from a while ago. And it was when I was in Canada that I realized that something was not right. I was feeling very hormonal, very angry, very hungry, very tired. And my period was about due, but I was never, you know, I never really tracked my period. I knew roughly when it was coming and I didn't think I was that late, if late, maybe a day or two. But I was telling my husband, I told one of my friends back home in Australia how I was feeling. And my friend is like, go and get a pregnancy test. You're pregnant. And I'm like, no way, it can't be. And sure enough, I was. And, you know, a couple of days before I did that test, I remember I slept for like 14 hours straight. And I was on a holiday in Canada and, you know, I'd wanted to bring my husband to Canada for so long. It's such a beautiful place and a place close to my heart. And I just wasn't enjoying it because I was so tired and so angry. I kind of describe it as PMS on steroids. So yeah, it was pretty false. But I knew, you know, I knew something was really different. And it's funny that I did the test first thing in the morning. It was really, really early. Actually, I had a business call early for the Australian time zone that morning. So I had to wake up at 5 and I woke up at 5 and I did the test and I was pregnant. And then I had to go on this call and pretend that nothing had happened. And then I was like, oh, I can celebrate now. I didn't want, you know, obviously didn't want to say anything. It was still really, really early days. And I remember feeling this instant change in me, just this instant from being quite impartial to motherhood and do I want it? Do I not want it? It's crunch time, to just literally immediately and instantly loving this ball of cells growing in me with every ounce of my being. It was amazing. And I had this really strong feeling in me that everything was going to be okay. I just knew it. Everything was going. And that feeling, I couldn't reach it at all the times during my pregnancy. And there was definitely some anxiety and some nerves when I was pregnant. But anytime that got really intense for me, I just sat and I thought and I leaned into that intuition of how I'd felt that day. And that always, you know, it never failed to make me feel in sync with baby and confident that baby was strong and healthy and everything was as it should be. So that was really nice.
Beautiful. What a magical story. So then you went back to Australia, and how did you decide, you know, with this first, you know, as we kind of said in the beginning, this first labor didn't really turn out the way you wanted. So what made you choose to birth the way you birthed the first time?
I think, to be honest, to be completely frank, it was my age. You know, they'd put the fear in me, the doctors and even yeah. people in my life that, you know, you're a bit older, so you should probably just trust the doctors. And
I was doing
shared care, so I had GP care because I was still traveling. I still had quite a bit of travel on my plate that year while I was pregnant. So GP and hospital sort of shared care. And I just did everything they told me to do. Do this test, sure. Take this drug, sure. You know, whatever you say. I just trusted everything implicitly. I didn't even think about home birth. I just didn't think that would be a very wise option for me. Mm. I don't know why. I did do hypnobirthing. I had a really great hypnobirthing coach, and she prepared me for what I could expect at the hospital with the interventions and induction and all of that. So I was really, really clear that I didn't want to be induced. And I had told every midwife that I'd spoken to that induction was just not on the cards for me, even though, you know, they ignore you and it's a different person that you speak to every time and they bring it up every time, and advanced maternal age and risk of stillbirth and all of this every time.
Oh, my God. Just anyone listening, this is horse poo.
Yes.
Just it is, because it has nothing to do with your age. It is like looking at you holistically. The reason that they say it increases with maternal age risk is because most people, when they get older, get other stuff, right? You know, that we become more unhealthy as we age, but not everyone. It's like looking at each person holistically. It's not about the age. It's not about the number. It's about, do you have other comorbidities that add to risk? Okay, then we can talk about risk. But just your age? No way. No way.
It was distressing. It's scary. Yeah. It's really scary to hear that.
Yeah, I know. And it is like you said, you know, you did do your, you know, research, and you did a childbirth education course, and you had a mentor and everything. But the thing is, if you go into the hospital system, like, you have to bring in some really powerful advocates with you to protect your space, to have a chance to have a physiological natural birth in there. Like, you really do. And I try to like say to everyone who will ever listen, like, sure, you can do it in hospital, but then you need to prepare and you need to bring in your guards. Like, you need to bring in the people.
Yeah, well, I can honestly say that out of all the mothers that I've talked to who have birthed in hospital, I don't think a single one has had a natural physiological birth. And I did have a doula, and I had my husband, and I had my birth plan, and I had people advocating for me.
Wow.
And I still fell prey to, to the cascade of interventions.
That's it.
And knowing, having gone in with that prior knowledge made it even worse, because it's like I knew.
I know.
It was happening to me.
It's so hard. Like, I walk in with women that employ me to be their, you know, sacred birth advocate and spiritual midwife for them in the system. And I fight to my teeth, you know, and still it will be so hard sometimes, depending on the people on shift and who they are and how well they will respect informed consent, a woman's rights, all of this. Like, because obviously we can't control the people that work there. We can only control who we bring in and who we are, but we can't control other people's actions and words and energy and everything. And we are left to faith there, you know, whoever walks into that birth space, when we are in their territory. That's their territory. It's not ours.
Yeah. And I mean, even the simplest of requests on my birth plan, like, don't talk to me while I'm in labor. Don't talk to me. Talk to my doula. Talk to my husband. They know what I want. That was not respected. And I had two midwives, because I had a really long labor with my firstborn, and they were both not bad, to be honest. I think they did talk to me, definitely. That was one boundary that was sort of repeatedly walked over.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really until the obstetricians became more involved, purely because of, you know, failure to progress, that old chestnut, because I'd been in labor and I'd been in the hospital for a while. So once the obstetricians got involved, because the time was ticking,
Which that's is bullshit.
When things, yeah, that's it totally is, you know, but yeah. that was when things started to turn.
Yeah.
And yeah. And the coercion and the control and the stepping over of boundaries and the rotating door and all of that. It's just not conducive to birth. It's really not.
So in the end of your labor, how did it unfold in the end?
So in the end, after a long labor, 36 hours actually of natural labor, I took an epidural, which I don't beat myself up about that decision. That was a decision. And I felt in control of that decision, I guess you would say. So that it's not what I wanted, but I was exhausted and I had nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
They did not tell me when I took the epidural, though, that they would be giving me Syntocinin. But they did. The Syntocinin drip went in. It was kind of, I believe it may have been mentioned as an afterthought, but, you know, I'd been in labor for a really long time. I'd been awake for 2 full nights.
Oh.
I don't have a strong recollection of them telling me much about the Syntocinin. I did have a little bit of sleep after that. And then I was woken up and given 10 minutes to push.
Oh.
After which they grabbed the forceps. Well, actually the vacuum first, then the forceps. And then my baby was pulled aggressively, violently into the world. I was cut episiotomy and, you know, I did not have a natural placenta birth either. So it was just by that point, it was completely out of my control. And I did ask, you know, when they gave me the opportunity to push, the obstetrician was in the room and she's telling me she wanted to use the forceps. And I was adamant that I did not want that. I wanted the opportunity to push. And she said my baby was in distress. And I said, my baby is not in distress. And I was I really dug my heels in on that. So they said, look, we'll give you a test. If you can agree to this test. They gave me that option. They tested baby's cortisol levels they insert something and probe the skin. I wasn't happy about it.
Take a blood test, yeah.
But I was willing to do whatever it took to prove that my baby was fine. And, you know, the fetal monitoring that they do is not that accurate. I knew that. I'd done the reading up on that. So they did that test and baby was totally fine. Totally fine. Zero stress, but they still didn't give me the opportunity to push baby out. And, you know, I remember arguing with the obstetrician while I was in labor and saying, you know, this is not what I want. And I know that I can do this. And my midwife was actually advocating for me, my hospital midwife. She was like, you can do this. She's got it. You've got this. And the obstetrician said, if it were me, I would be getting that baby out of there right now. And she used all this fear-based language. And there was a lot of sort of, I don't know, like her tone was really stressed and anxious and heightened. And, you know, I felt scared. I didn't want to go that far into my labor and not have a healthy outcome, of course. So I did it. I agreed. And I didn't feel good about it.
Yeah.
I felt really shameful about it. I went into motherhood flat on my back, unable to move, disempowered, taken advantage of, unsupported.
Yeah.
I had issues with my bladder from the catheter they used. I had issues with recovery. My episiotomy hurt like hell for a long time afterwards. And it was just a really bad experience for me.
Yeah. And I so feel for you because I know exactly how these obstetricians talk. I recently had this kind of obstetrician just a couple of weeks ago with a client of mine and that we both fought. This is the thing when you go into that hospital, it's their domain and they, many of them have no bedside manners and they are just so scared of birth and they only see pathology. So I understand that this was traumatic for you. It's traumatic for me to witness women go through this as well. And, you know, I have seen plenty of that both as a midwife in that in the hospital system and as an advocate for women trying to protect them from the system. So when you came out of this, I know you took away some good teachings from these learnings You know, I guess when we do have traumatic experiences, what it does do for us is that it brings us to a deep depth inside of us. It opens up chambers we didn't know. It teaches us. It heals stuff, even though it breaks us open. It also, brings the potential of healing. So how was that journey for you afterwards?
I would say that it was a little bit delayed.
Yeah.
I had my little girl, and about a month later, the COVID pandemic was declared. This was back in early 2020.
Right.
And the business that I was currently working in was an events, I had an events business at the time where I and my business partners taught people how to get paid to travel. You know, I was a travel influencer, travel photographer at the time. And we had made the decision that we would sort of really lean into that business, given that I was about to have a baby and I wouldn't be traveling and doing the work I usually did. So that business, the events business, got absolutely smashed during COVID, but we really early on decided to go virtual. And so our business went, I can't even tell you, it went absolutely gangbusters during COVID. So we had a new business partner come in, we took everything virtual, we started offering some upsells and coaching programs, we sort of pivoted a little bit into business coaching from the travel space, and it was just crazy town. You know, my husband was very, very early on in a startup business at the time, and he wasn't working much, and he was basically the stay-at-home dad. I was working from home, and I just sort of threw myself into that, and I didn't give myself a chance to process the birth or to truly experience the start of motherhood because the business was going so well. And things weren't perfect in the business. I had two business partners, but on the outside, we were very successful. We were making a lot of money. We had a lot of clients. We had great success stories. Everything on the surface looked amazing. And it wasn't until last year when somebody very close to me had a miscarriage at 13 weeks. And I said to my husband, I was really devastated for her, really, really devastated. Mm. And I said to my husband, what are we doing? Mm. What are we waiting for? Let's just have more babies. Mm. And after I'd had my baby, after I had Mark, I remember in that little bliss, that bubble that you're in for the first week or two, I remember saying to my husband on a walk one afternoon, let's just keep having babies. Let's just have all the babies. This is the best feeling in the world. Mm. And then, busy life. I was in my head so much and just really operating from my masculine side and my masculine energy. And then my good friend had this miscarriage, and I said to my husband, I'm ready. I'm ready now. Like I want another baby. And 2 days later, I felt that I was ovulating, and it was the first time that we had done it, done the deed, had sex while I was ovulating since I'd had my daughter. I was still breastfeeding. She was about two, and we fell pregnant that one time, and it was just the right time. And about, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks after that, I sort of looked at my life and I looked at the business, and it's like everything just clicked into place. Like I took my glasses off and I could see what was happening, and I just knew that it wasn't for me anymore. I knew that that business was not the vehicle for me, and that that business was not going to give me the opportunity to be the mother that I wanted to be and have the life that I wanted to have. Mm. And my business partners, they had their own reasons and their own concerns, and we had a really great amicable conversation, and we did decide to close the business down. And for me, so much of that came down to the fact that I just wanted to be a mom for a little while. I just wanted to step into my feminine and not feel so much pressure to be everything, to be earning and to be successful. And it ended up being a really, really powerful year of personal growth for me on a lot of different levels. And I really attribute so much of that to being pregnant. I'd been in the personal development space for a long time prior to that, but I would say that last year was my biggest year of personal growth ever. I likened it to a freight train. It was just unavoidable, undeniable. My stories came crashing around. Mm. My identity came crashing around, around me. Mm. Everything that I thought I knew about myself came tumbling down. And I needed it. I really, really needed it. It was well overdue. And I think it was during that time that I started to focus in on what had happened to me when I birthed my daughter and what I wanted for myself and my life and what I felt I deserved. And I think it was about that time that I just realized I've been ripped off. Like, there is something powerful here for me that has been stolen from me. Like, that's how I felt. And, you know, of course, personal responsibility and, you know, I believe in all of that and I know I made my choices, but it's a very, very powerful system.
Yes.
And I just remember anger, just feeling angry, like probably for the first time in my life, like really fucking angry that that had been my experience. So there was a lot of healing. There was a lot of letting go. There was a lot of intuition. There was a lot of flow and there was a lot of feminine happening in my life for the first time last year while I was pregnant with my little boy.
And you shared about a ceremony that you did.
Yes, I did. I did a couple of things, but the so one thing that I did do that probably was not that great for me was that I left everything until the last minute with baby. I was still doing a little bit of work. We had to wind the business down. We still had clients. We still had a fair bit going on and wrapping up the entities and sort of got about a month out. And I was like, oh God, like I still, you know, I wanted to have a photo shoot with my bump and I wanted to have a baby shower. And I want, you know, I was nesting. I wanted to dig out all the baby clothes and there was, I had to fit the car seat and get a new car seat and all of this stuff. And I ended up making this really big list and sitting down with my husband one day and saying, this is everything that's got to happen. And we put it all in our calendar and it was just a lot of stuff. And I pushed myself probably too hard. One of the things on that list was the, you know, letting go ceremony, for want of a better expression. But it felt like a task that needed to be ticked off the list. And even though I did feel, I felt a release from doing it, I didn't really allow myself to truly, truly connect with that moment and let it all go. And what it was, you know, my daughter was with me. You know, I didn't have a lot of time. I was obviously distracted. I had a two-year-old at my heels and I just grabbed a few pieces of paper and I wrote out everything that had gone awry with my first birth experience and how angry I was and who I was angry at and why. And I took those words down to the beach and lit them on fire. And it was a really windy night. It took me so long to light those pieces of paper on fire. And my daughter was with me. I'd taken her over with me and sort of told her a little bit about what I was doing. And yeah, we lit it on fire and buried it. And yeah, I sort of went home and I was like, right, what's next on the list? And about, it was a little just over 2 weeks before my due date, I also had booked in the maternity photo shoot. And we'd done it for a sunrise because I'm a photographer. I love good light. So rather than being kind to myself at, you know, 38 weeks pregnant, I decided I'd wake up at 3:30 in the morning and put on some makeup and go down to the beach in the cold and do a photo shoot. And during that photo shoot, I started to feel really, really cold. It was a cold morning. And, you know, I was in my bra and undies and other little lacy, beautiful looking clothes for this shoot. And I knew I was getting sick. As we were driving away, I was like, oh, I think I can feel something like really brewing in me. And I did. I got really, really sick after that photo shoot. So I still, despite everything and all the growth that I'd been through, I still wasn't listening to myself and I wasn't listening to what baby needed and I wasn't honoring myself and I wasn't slowing down. And for all of my talking about it, I wasn't allowing myself to sit in my feminine. I was still driving all of the action, not surrendering, not letting my husband step up to the plate. Like I was still like in charge, I guess you would say. And my body decided, we're going to let you, or we, because it was me and my son, we're going to let you know that you need to just actually stop now. And I did get really sick. And I, you know, I went to the doctor after I'd been sick for a little while and I got given a lot of asthma medication and steroids and all kinds of things. You know, I couldn't breathe. And one day I decided, well, I actually had it booked in my diary. I was getting my braces off And I decided I would go through with that appointment. As sick as I was, I couldn't breathe through my nose. I was an absolute mess. And I dropped my daughter off at daycare and was sitting having a smoothie at the, you know, a little cafe close by before I went to the orthodontist. And I was the weakest I've ever felt in my life. Like, I was thinking, how am I going to get from where I'm sitting over to the car to drive to this appointment? And you would think at this point that I would say, time to let somebody help you, time to ask for help, time to ask for support. And I didn't. I drove to the orthodontist and I sat in the chair and I had my braces removed, which was the most hellish hour of my life. I couldn't breathe. You know, they're blasting my mouth. I can't breathe through my nose. And I think it was the day after that, that my midwife just called to check in on me, and I was a mess, you know. And to have somebody be kind and nurturing and concerned, and I just let it go. I just cried and I told her how sick I was and how ill prepared I was to birth, and I had no strength left in my body, and I didn't know if I was going to get better, and I didn't know what this meant for my birth. And she said to me, have you ever stopped to consider that there could be something emotional in this for you? You know, less on the physical side, more on the emotional side. And I said, well, yeah, probably. But I had not given myself permission to feel it yet. I had not given myself permission to explore it. I just wanted to get everything done, you know. And having a toddler second time around, it's obviously a different ball game because you've got another little person that's really reliant on you. And yeah, I hadn't given myself that permission. But after Pip, my midwife, asked me that question, I decided that I would reach out to somebody for help. And I reached out to a healer that I knew. I'd actually met her at one of the events that I'd attended that year, one of the personal development events. And she does energy work, clearing, but she's also very intuitive, and she's pretty out there. And she actually specializes in working with nonverbal children and unborn babies, communicating with them. So I texted her and Jenny, like, SOS, please, have you got time to do a session with me? And she said she did. And we jumped on a call and, you know, she started furiously communicating with me and baby and asking questions and doing the clearings. And, oh, it went pretty deep. You know, I don't even remember a lot of what came up, but most of what came up was baby. Like, baby just had a lot to say. She was like, whoa. Your baby has a lot to say, because I'd spent almost my entire pregnancy ignoring Baba, and I didn't know the sex at this time. I hadn't been honoring myself. I hadn't been honoring what baby needed. I was just pushing and pushing and pushing, trying to get the business wrapped up. You know, things will be fine when I get to, you know, I'll feel happier. I feel better. I feel settled. I'll step into my feminine when it was never just allowing myself to be that in the moment. So after this call with Jenny, she said, if you can have a nap, have a nap. And my husband was out with my daughter, and I managed to just fall asleep on the couch for about half an hour, fully in parasympathetic at this point. Like, I'd cried my eyes. I was so emotional, cried my eyes out. Everything had been cleared. I fell asleep and I woke up after half an hour and I felt well. You know, she'd asked baby to move. Baby had been taking up a lot of space. It's almost like Bubba was just in me, like, stretching out, like, listen, I'm going to take up as much space and be as loud as I can in here until you just listen to what I'm trying to tell you. And as soon as I did that session and I was hearing baby and honoring myself, baby just got calm and small. And baby had been sitting on a nerve, which was giving me headaches. Baby had been taking up space, which was giving me, you know, I couldn't breathe very well. That was exacerbating all the asthma. And baby just, yeah, said, okay, mum, thank you for listening. And yeah, just really settled down. I had my baby shower the next day. I was totally back to normal, not sick at all after a good couple of weeks of being really, really unwell. And from that day, I just listened to myself. I started taking these beautiful, really expensive probiotics. I started having like a warm mug of broth every morning. I took all my supplements. I was eating really beautiful, nourishing food. I stopped all the activity. I asked for help. I really started to embody the things that I said that I wanted to embody, the stuff that was in theory until I had that experience of getting really sick. And that was a real turning point.
This is for all my mamas out there. Did you know I have a signature childbirth education course called the Natural Birth Course, which is designed to help assist you in optimizing your chances of having a natural, physiological, and sovereign birth of your baby? If you see childbirth as a rite of passage like me and not as a medical event, and you want to feel fully prepared physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually for your birth, then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Included is over 40 bite-sized video lessons with me, sharing all my knowledge about birth, your body, and your amazing womb. I share fear releases, meditations, natural birth video playlists, checklists, and guides to optimize your physiology and for you to have a sovereign and empowering birth experience 24/7 from the comfort of your own home. There are different payment plans to suit everyone's wallet and needs, and you can find out all about it at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
And this time around, so it sounds like you're having a midwife that you're talking to. So what was your birth plan this time for the second?
So this time around, I had wanted to go for a home birth. And ultimately, because I had given the business away and I knew that I wouldn't be earning any money, I was actually in a lot of scarcity around money last year, I would say. So even though there were savings and even though there was a plan and even though, you know, I'm a brilliant entrepreneur, I've made stacks of money over my life, I felt really scared about money. And I was also, you know, I was in survival state for most of last year leading up to the birth. I was really fight or flight, like really just in quite a bad activated heightened state. There was just a lot going on for me. And ultimately I'd decided I wasn't going to spend the money to get a home birth. I was going to spend the money on a birth photographer again, which is costly as well. I put more value in that. And I got into MGP, which is a midwifery group practice. So I had continuity of care. And I thought with continuity of care and with my experience from last time, I felt like I could go into the hospital system and still have a positive outcome. I felt like it was possible, strongly possible. If I didn't think it was possible, I probably would have been able to justify the home birth. And I did think about it. It was on the table. But when I got into MGP, I was like, no, I think this is going to be the thing that makes a difference for me. So sort of fingers crossed and let's see. My midwife, Pip, she was absolutely amazing. She was a mutual friend. We had a mutual friend. She had been the midwife for that mutual friend and delivered her baby. And she was well known in our circles and knew, you know, I was confident. She was just a really, really beautiful person, the right fit for me, the right energy for me. And yeah, I was very, very grateful to get into that program. And I think a couple of strings were pulled to get me in as well, because my friend recommended me to that program and reached out to Pip and said, have you seen this application? Because it is really hard to get into MGP.
Yeah.
So I was very, very lucky that that had happened. And I may have gotten a spot anyway. I was low risk and I had gotten my application in early, but certainly I know that a call was made and I did get that spot. So that was lucky for me.
Beautiful. So after 40 weeks, you're dropping, you're allowing, you're surrendering to the flow. You stop the doing and enter the being. And then what happens?
I had a really strong feeling that baby was going to let me regain my strength. I had had with my firstborn, I had gone into labor at 39 plus 5, which was lucky. because, as you know, if you go over that 40-week mark, that guesstimate date, the pressure really turns up for an induction, especially when you are of advanced maternal age. So I didn't have to face a lot of that with my daughter. And originally I thought, you know, if my firstborn came on time and she was born a day before my due date in the end, I had that really long labor, I thought that would be the case with my secondborn, that baby would come on time or early even. And I'd sort of thought that throughout the pregnancy. But after all of this happened, I was like, baby is not going to come a day before I'm ready. Not one day. And I will go as long as it takes. I really don't care what people say to me. And at this point in your pregnancy, you've got the obstetricians calling you once or twice a week, even though you've got MGP. And, you know, they're saying all the risk of stillbirth and all of this is happening again. And I just said, talk to me at 42 weeks. At 42 weeks, I'll have the conversation. But until then, I'm not going to even entertain it. I feel really confident that baby's fine. So I was nourishing myself. As I said, I was sitting out in the sunshine every morning with my beautiful big belly on display and my legs up and my warm mug of broth in my favorite little moon mug and, you know, and my supplements and my fresh, I'd squeeze a couple of oranges every morning. And oh, I just felt slowly bit by bit that I was coming back to myself and my strength was picking up and I was honoring myself and giving baby what baby needed as well. So that was where I was at when I got to 40+6. 40+6, for some reason, just decided that we were going to have a picnic that day. And I sort of got out of bed with a big burst of energy and I made this huge feast. I made like a million sandwiches and I made a huge batch of potato salad and some salad. And I packed up our picnic boxes and I stacked the fridge full of leftovers. And my husband and daughter and I went out and we had a beautiful picnic in the sun. And we got home and I said to my husband, you know, I'm just going to chill for the rest of the day, but I'm probably going to have an early night too. So, you know, can you, you know, do the parenting for the rest of the day? And then, you know, sort of late afternoon, I decided I really was craving a bowl of pasta. And I had a very specific pasta in mind, and it's an alli olio, so an olive oil based pasta that neither my husband nor my daughter particularly likes. So I just cooked it for myself. I just went in the kitchen and I made this huge bowl of pasta with broccoli and garlic and chili and freshly squeezed lemon juice and Parmesan cheese. And I just sat and ate this massive bowl of pasta. And I just said, okay, I'm going to go to bed now. And it was quite early. And I said to Emmanuel that night, like, I think it's going to happen soon. And I went into labor that night. And I sort of, I was just so in flow with myself. I was so in tune. Like, I knew I needed the rest. I knew I needed the sunlight. I knew I needed the carbohydrates and the food. And I just, everything that my body was telling me, I was like, yep. I'll do it. Got into bed. And yeah, the contractions sort of started that night. Not too heavy. Enough. I could still sort of sleep through them, but the sleep was quite disrupted. And I did worry about that because that's how my first labor started. And I worried that I'd lose steam and that things would go for too long and I'd lose steam and I'd get exhausted like the previous time. And so I did try and sleep. I tried to sleep and rest as much as I could, but at 5 a.m, I couldn't sleep anymore. I sort of got up and the contractions were, you know, still intermittent, like maybe one every 20 minutes, but quite strong, sort of picking up in intensity. And by about 7 o'clock, between 7 and 8, it was sort of one every 10 minutes. And I said to Emmanuel, like, you've got to get Mikey off to daycare, because she was due to go to daycare that day. And we'd planned for her to sleep at grandma's while we went to the hospital. And so he said, okay. So he's sort of bustling around and getting my daughter ready. And he left at about 8 o'clock in the morning, which was quite early. We used to drop her off quite late, but about 8 a.m, he's out of there and I'm at home. And next minute, things just really intensified. And I felt obviously very unsupported because I'm at home alone with literally nobody to support me. And that was one of the words that had come up for me when I was doing, you know, really sitting into the trauma and how I'd felt about my first birth. It was that feeling of being unsupported and nobody advocating for me.
Mm.
So I got into a bit of my story, you know, I'm up in my head like, woe is me, like nobody's looking after me. And I was like, this is not going to get me anywhere. So what I did in that moment, I had this brief moment of lucidity and clarity. And in that moment, I called my midwife and she'd luckily just come back on rotation after 4 days off. It was her first day back. And I called her and I was crying and I was saying, I'm not handling this because things had really, really picked up. I'm not handling the pain. And in my mind at the time, I was like, just take me to the hospital and give me every epidural you have. Like, I can't do this. And then I messaged my healer, Jenny, almost straight after on another break between contractions. And same thing, I told her I wasn't handling the pain and I was having a back labor. Baby was posterior. Mm. So I was having a lot of pain in my back and I was just like, I can't, like, this is just too much. This is not what I was expecting. And it felt a lot more intense than anything I remember from my first labor.
Mm.
And it also felt like I still had a long time to go.
Mm.
I hadn't lost my mucus plug. I hadn't lost my waters. Absolutely nothing was going on down there whatsoever, but the pain was out of this world, absolutely out of this world. But I had that moment of clarity, and I've reached out to Pip, I've reached out to Jenny, I've told both of them where I was at. And by then I just couldn't touch my phone anymore. I was just in it. I was in it. And my husband arrived home and he was like, what's going on? Because I'm crying. I'm a mess. Like, oh, I can't do this. And he said, what can I do to help you? And he said, do you want to get in the water? Do you want to get in the shower? And I said, yeah, okay, let's do that. So he started taping some plastic bags to one of our dining chairs. And because we didn't have a chair that could go in the shower and, you know, he was just trying to help. So he's taping this chair up and he's carted it down to the shower and put it in. He's got the water running and I go down. And I try to sit down and I can't even sit, like I can't, not even close, because all the pain was in my back. I couldn't bend my body in that way. So then I'm like a mess. So I've got no clothes on now. I'm dripping wet. I can't sit down in the shower. Emmanuel starts messaging with Jenny at this point. So Jenny's messaged back. She's my healer. On my phone, he's got my phone. I think I did say to him, you know, see if Jenny's messaged, see if Jenny was my lifeline. Has Jenny messaged? So Jenny had messaged. She starts doing some clearings, just remote clearings. I don't have to be involved. She's telling Emmanuel, you know, a couple of things to sort of keep me distracted and keep me on track. And she says, tell Lauren to breathe into baby. Tell Lauren baby wants her to put her arms up. So I'm just like, okay, so I'm just doing the things that Jenny says, not trusting myself, trusting Jenny at this point. But then I start like, okay, that's right. Like I do have control here. Okay. So my head's back in the game. I'm not in the story. I'm not in my head. I'm not thinking I can't do it anymore. I'm just like, okay, I'm in it. I've got help. Jenny's here. I'm supported. Emmanuel's here. My husband, Jenny's here. Okay. So I start sort of pacing up and down the hallway, and every time I had a contraction, I'm hanging on to one of the door frames. And I come back to the kitchen, I'm bent over the kitchen bench, and I'm feeling really hot, like so hot, and just not feeling well. And Emmanuel says to me, like, yep, Jenny just said that you and baby are in sync. So he was, and, you know, I went through all the messages later and asked Jenny, and she'd been taking some notes as well, and she'd said that baby was resisting the pull of the uterus. Baby was not surrendering. Baby had some concerns and some, you know, things that baby was worried about. And she was clearing it all. It was all getting cleared. And then next minute we're in sync. And I felt it. Like my husband did not even have to tell me that message came through, because although the pain didn't lessen, I no longer was resist. There was no resistance from me or baby. All of a sudden, baby and I were on the same team. We were both after the same outcome and we were working together for that common goal. And I just felt it click into place. And that's when my midwife walked in. She had said, when I'd had that brief call with her, she'd said, you know, I've just come in to the office. I'm going to call in on one other of my people, my women. and I'm going to call in and see how you're going and let you know if it's time to go over to the hospital and what the situation is. And I'm just, so don't even worry. My whole day is free. I'm here for you. I'm on my way, like just hanging in there. So she walks through the door and I'm butt naked, leaning over my kitchen bench, screaming a little bit by this point, but feeling in sync with baby, feeling like things are happening. And she sat there and just watched me for three contractions. And after the third contraction, I started pushing. I just started pushing. And she said, "Are you pushing right now?" And I went, "I think I'm pushing." And I was crying and I was really emotional. And so she said, "Okay, let's move from here over to the couch. I just want to check to see if you're dilated. Do you mind? You know, do you mind if I just check? You know, because I'm obviously pushing by this point." So I said, "That's fine." And she put me in a position on the ground that felt really awful and uncomfortable. I was kind of on my back with one leg up, and she checked and I was fully dilated. You know, I was starting to push, and she wanted me to stay in that position because she said it's a really good position to move baby down the birth canal. And I was just like, "No, I can't. It's too much. It's too much."
On your back? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
it was.
God.
I was on my back, but she said it was a really good position. I don't know. Maybe because baby hadn't turned. I don't know. But as soon as I said, "No, it's too much," she was, yep, straight away. She didn't insist. She didn't sort of, yeah, push that point. So I got on my hands and knees and I pushed for the next hour and 45 minutes. That's how long it took me to push baby. Mm. I did later talk to a couple of midwives that I know who said that in the system in Australia for your second birth, the hospital gives you 30 minutes to push before they start wanting to intervene and, yeah, and get in there.
Yeah, I would say 30 to an hour, depending on where you are. Yeah, for a first-time mom, it's around 2 hours. For a second-time mom, it's 1 hour, which is, again, bullshit. It so depends. How is that baby positioned? So obviously you just shared with us that you had a posterior baby, which tend to, and not always, you're like, it doesn't mean like because you have a posterior baby, it's going to be a longer, more harder labor. Obviously, yours weren't that long. So like that shows that. But, you know, there it depends how the baby's lying. And each labor and birth will be different. You can have a really quick one time, a really long one, the second or third. So if anyone does go into the system or has, you know, midwives who work under those kind of guidelines, do not let timelines be ever a factor. And I really want to emphasize that. And that's what I've said so many times, because there is no evidence around this at all. It's not a problem. You can push for hours. It depends, right? Depends on your baby. Depends on you. Depends on so many different factors, if that is a problem or not. Most of the time there's no problem. Let it take its time.
Yeah. And it was, I didn't feel any sense of urgency being at home. And, you know, Pip, being that she's with MGP, they're not supposed to do home birth. You know, they're supposed to get you to hospital. That's their job. And there's repercussions for them if they don't bring you into hospital. They get questioned and and all kinds of things. And yeah, I was just incredibly lucky that Pip made that judgment call. And she said, you know, "I have to advise you that you should transfer into hospital. But if you don't want to, I'm happy to stay here and birth this baby at home with you." And she was very firm in that, very confident. She gave me that option. And the second it came out of her mouth, I said, "I want to stay at home." You know, we both knew, baby knew, and we later talked about it. And we both said, like, your baby, like, he did not want to be born in hospital at all. So I was very, very, very grateful that had happened and it had gone that way. And I'd had this one uncomfortable position, and then I'd gotten up on my hands and knees, and I was I was just screaming through every contraction, just screaming, just really guttural. I wouldn't even say it was a primal sound. I would just scream. The contraction would come, I would scream, it would stop, and I would just rest. And I don't like being touched when I'm in a contraction. I don't look at anyone. I'm just head down. they had to close the veranda doors because I was screaming so loudly. My midwife did call the paramedics. So the paramedics arrived. She has to. That's a part of her policy. But they were extremely hands-off. They didn't even – they just sort of stood back in case there was an emergency. Mm-hmm. And my husband also managed to contact the birth photographer in time because things did actually pick up quite quickly, you know, from 5 in the morning where it was just intermittent to, you know, 8 o'clock feeling unsupported and reaching out for help and then sinking, you know, everything sinking up around 10 o'clock to push in, you know. Mm-hmm. Things had happened quite quickly. And at no point did I lose my mucus plug and at no point did I lose my waters. Mm. And that's why I was probably thinking, I can't do this, because I thought that that was something that had to happen. And I was Googling it in the early stages because it was so painful and I hadn't lost my mucus plug. I hadn't lost my waters. And I'm like, is this possible? Mm. How can I be progressing? Mm. And how much longer of this do I have to take? So, yeah, interestingly that didn't happen. So I, you know, I had Pip there. She was amazing. She was just letting me know that I've got this, basically, just a few words. She only measured baby's heartbeat a handful of times. She was feeding me sips of coconut water, which was hydrating me, and I'd said that I'd wanted it. So she was, yeah, she just knew. My husband was sort of bumbling about and sort of touching me and I'm like, oh, get off me. Or, you know, I don't know. But everything Pip did was perfect and spot on and exactly what I needed. So it was so awesome having that there. My birth photographer arrived. My birth photographer was actually my original birth photographer was on holiday and I knew that. I knew that I'd have a backup photographer. And then the backup photographer wasn't available that day. So when Emmanuel messaged my original birth photographer, Laura, she said, oh God, like the backup photographer's not available. Give me a minute. I'm going to make some phone calls. And she did have a backup photographer and she did live pretty far away, but she said she got every single green light on the way and she got there with half an hour to spare. So the birth video starts 30 minutes before I had the baby, but it's very cool. It's very cool. She did a beautiful job actually. And so, yeah, I'm pushing. It's intense, but I just at this point, I felt really supported. I felt supported. I felt confident in my ability to do it. And a couple of pieces of, well, one in particular, one piece of advice that I had read, two things that I had read leading up to the birth that just really anchored me and had me able to do that thing. One was to choose your pain. You know, I think I'd read it in Ina May's Guide to Natural Childbirth. And it was basically you can choose the pain of labor and contractions and childbirth, or you can choose to delay the pain mm-hmm. with the recovery from the interventions. Mm-hmm. And given that I'd had an intervention heavy birth the first time around, and I'd had the episiotomy, which absolutely, I can't even tell you how painful that was for weeks afterwards. I had the catheter. I ended up having really bad bladder issues after that. I was diagnosed with an overactive bladder, which for a lot of people is incurable. Luckily for me, I managed to work through that with some neural reprogramming. I did not want to choose my pain later. I wanted to front end that pain. Mm-hmm. And that piece of advice was just reverberating in my brain. And I was like, yeah, I would much rather go through this. And, you know, they say that the pain of labor and the pain of childbirth, it's a different sort of pain because it's physiological. It's natural to your body. And I would agree with that. At no point during my labor, even though it felt very painful for me and that was the frame that I used, at no point did it feel like it was a bad pain and it was doing me harm or doing me damage. Mm. So that helped me. Mm. And the second thing that helped me was there comes a point in labor. I'm pretty sure this was Ina May as well. There comes a point in labor when you realize that you're in it and nobody can get you out of it except for yourself.
Yes.
Like when you have that realization, and I had that realization. I just reached that point, especially when I made the decision not to go to hospital. And, you know, such a turnaround too, because literally when I called my midwife, like I said, my mindset was take me to the hospital and give me every epidural you have. Like, yeah. I was so clear that there was no way on earth that I could continue to handle that feeling.
You were in that moment, like listening to your story, you were in transition, right? And you can see that now, right, that you were, because 2 hours later you were pushing. And that was the kind of crisis of confidence that all women go through. And yeah. you hit it alone. So, yes. you know, no wonder you went on a spiral. But where you took that spiral was you reached out to the right people. You reached out to your healer and to your midwife, knowing that they were the ones you needed in that yes. moment. And your husband yeah. was on his way back, like he would come any moment. So,
yeah.
I can see that very clearly from your story, that you hit transition as he was leaving and you found yourself alone. And then you navigated that for the next couple of hours. You know, you came through with it. He came home. You found your rhythm. The midwife came. You started pushing.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that you're spot on. So I was pushing, and then I could feel the head. I could feel that the head was there. And I, you know, the first time around, because I had my feet up in forceps and I was on the epidural and the Syntocin and I was disempowered and there were all these strangers in the room and they said, do you want to feel your baby's head? And I didn't want to feel it. I had no interest. I think I did, you know, they kind of insisted, like, go on, feel it. So I did, but it didn't feel good or natural to me. I couldn't even feel what was going on down there. But this time you could not get my hands away from it. Like I had my fingers inside myself, feeling baby come down the birth canal, feeling the little head. And as soon as, once baby popped out, my whole hand, I remember, was just cupping baby's head. And, you know, I did have the they call it the burning ring of fire. I did like really, really feel. That was actually the first time I said, oh. I was like, oh, 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 when I was birthing the head.
Mm.
And that passed really quickly. Mm. And I just could feel my baby's head, and my baby was talking. My baby came out of me talking. And actually my midwife said she's never seen that before. She's never seen a baby halfway out the birth canal already talking, having a conversation. So, and he was chattering away, and one more push and out came Bubba. And I remember my husband caught my little boy. And I still didn't know the sex at this point. And Pip just said, well, you know, we're just unwrapping the cord and we're going to hand baby under. She was really clear that, you know, mother had to claim the baby. So baby got passed under. And I said, oh, darling, and this is all in the birth video, but I remembered saying, it's a boy. I knew you were a boy, because I knew I'd become very, very clear, especially in the later weeks of my pregnancy. You know, I'd done so much work and so much healing work, and just, you know, having a daughter, having a little girl already, I've done a lot of work around the feminine, but there was still a lot of prejudice and a lot of bias for me around the masculine. And obviously, because I'd been so in my masculine for so much of my life, I knew there was more healing there for me. And I remember saying at my baby shower, you know, everyone saying, what do you think it is, a boy or a girl? And I remember saying, you know, I really think the universe is going to give me a sensitive little boy. And that's going to be the next step of my healing. So he comes through and I said, it's a boy. I knew you were a boy. And I claimed him. I just pulled him up to my chest. And that instant relief, like, first of all, instant pain, like the pain is gone. Not only is the pain gone instantly, like instantly, but what is replacing the pain is the most intoxicating, euphoric, just burst of like love and feel good hormones. In all my days, I never imagined that it would feel like that. And I've never come even close to feeling that way before. And, you know, I remember thinking in that moment, like, nothing can touch me again in life. Like, there's actually nothing that I will ever face in my life that will challenge me that I can't get over, because I've done that. I've done that. Like, nobody can take that away from me. I fucking did that. Yeah. Nobody can touch me. And that feeling, like, as long as I live, if I'm ever doing anything challenging or faced with something challenging. And I have since Will was born. It's like, who cares? I birthed a baby. And I just, that's, you know, one of the reasons why I reached out to you, because I really believe that women have been fed too many lies about our capabilities and our bodies. And birth is the most powerful, magical, incredible rite of passage that a woman can go through. I remember I shared some thoughts during Birth Trauma Awareness Week, which was on recently. And, you know, I have a really big Instagram account. I was an influencer back in the day. And, you know, the internet is a divisive place. And I remember one comment in particular where a woman had said, you know, birth isn't some magical experience that some women say it is. And I'm thinking, that is the literal definition for me of birth. Mm. It is magical.
Mm.
Powerful. It is everything.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, this woman has not experienced that.
No.
Because if you've experienced that, there's no other word that you would use to describe it, I don't think. It was absolutely amazing. And that euphoria lasted for a good couple of days, like at that intensity.
Yes.
And I can draw on it at any time. Like, I can draw on it to prepare to have this interview with you. I watched my birth video again, and it just brings back all of the emotion and how I felt. And yeah, it was incredible. It's really just amazing that women can do that. It's absolutely amazing.
Natural physiological birth is a gift. A gift to women to fully embody and understand every level of their humanness, divineness, everything, that they are powerful, incredibly powerful. Mm. And you're so right that our current maternity system, our current birthing culture around the world, is doing the absolute opposite to women. They are robbing women of this experience. And women do not know what they actually are giving up when they do choose a medicalized birth. Because it's presented as, you know, oh, you shouldn't have to have pain in labor and birth. Just do this. Just take the epidural and let us deliver your baby. Instead of telling women the truth, which is this, they are capable of... Their body is capable of producing all these hormones that give them such peak states, oxytocin and beta endorphins. It is euphoric. It is like nothing else. And men and women will never experience it outside of childbirth. No. No one will experience this outside of childbirth.
Well, I have done some amazing things in my life as an influencer, as a travel photographer, as a traveler, skydiving, you know, paragliding. I've had experiences in the most beautiful countries in the world. I've been under the Northern Lights in Finland. I've been to Antarctica. I've had the highest of highs in my life, and they are a pale. You can't even compare these experiences with childbirth. They're not even on the same page. Nothing will ever come close to that feeling.
Goosebumps. And such an important message that, I'm so glad that you wanted to come and share with us. And also something that I'm passionate about, screaming from the rooftops to anyone that will ever listen to me. So thank you for coming and sharing this. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now, who's about to have her first baby, and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Home birth. Home birth, yeah. I was very fortunate that my midwife took that risk in giving me that choice to stay at home. If that hadn't have happened, if she had have played by the book and brought me into hospital, you know, as policy dictates they do, I'm pretty confident that my birth experience would not have gone the way that it went. you know, even knowing the guidelines for pushing and, you know, knowing that last time labor stalled as soon as I got into that unfamiliar environment and knowing I still had some fear and trauma around it, you know, I think that something would have happened to me again.
Yeah.
And having had that experience of birthing at home, I would choose it again. Like, I would take my money. I don't care what it costs. If I do have another baby and I want to, I'm 42 now, but I'm like, yeah, I got more in me. Bring it on. 100% straight up, I would go for a home birth. Yeah. I think it's absolutely worth the money spent to have that continuity of care, to have that relationship with a midwife, somebody that you can trust, somebody that understands birth, and to be in an environment that feels safe to you. Like, that just made the absolute world of difference to me. I felt so safe. I felt way less safe at home than I did in hospital. In hospital, I felt unsafe, unheard, unsupported, unlistened to. Like, it was a worlds apart experience. And at home, I just felt like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
I loved having my midwife there. I needed that support. You know, I know free birth is really taking off at the moment. And I don't know, personal choice, like however people want to birth, like you do you. But for me, having a woman there that was known to me, who knows babies and childbirth, that made a big difference to me as well. So I would say do the home birth. Just do that from the start. Don't even entertain anything else. If you want a good outcome, you know, the odds are just stacked against you in the hospital. They're absolutely stacked against you. 100%. And if you want that feeling, if you want to know what you can do, if you want to feel the power that is inside of you, like, give yourself every opportunity, because once you enter that system, you are at their mercy.
Yes, very true. Well said. And, you know, I was just speaking to someone else about this, how women will buy a new pram for the same price that they would employ an independent home birth midwife. And they would choose to buy that new pram instead of investing in this experience that is their rite of passage, that is life altering, that can either cause her trauma or incredible empowerment.
Yes.
What is a pram compared to that?
Yeah,
I just wish that our materialistic, you know, world would stop looking outside for things and instead look at how can I, you know, go through these life-altering rite of passages to fully heal me, my lineage. Mm. You know, what an amazing thing for your daughter that her mother now has experienced this and has this embodiment so that you can speak of birth in this way to her when it comes time for her potentially. And for your boy to know how he was born when he maybe goes on and has babies, you know, knowing his mother birthed him at home. These stories are powerful and change. They change the world.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I couldn't agree with you more. I have family obviously in Zimbabwe, I mentioned, and the birth culture over there is so different. There's not fear attached to it. Everybody births naturally. It's only if you have a really serious complication that they would even think of intervening in childbirth.
Mm.
You stay at home or you go to a birth center and you birth your baby. And I think knowing that did really help me to at least seek out more information the first time around. Because I was born via an elective cesarean. Mm. My brother was born via an emergency cesarean for failure to progress. And there's implications to that.
Yeah.
There is, you know, I've done work around my experience of coming into the world alone. You know, back then they used to knock the mother out and you would be born and you'd be handed off to a nurse and put into a crib. And my God, like, that's traumatic.
Yes.
And they just cut you out and your oxygen supply is cut off instantly. And I still, to this day, I have issues with my breathing and I'm a shallow breather and I'm a mouth breather. And, you know, these things, they impact every part of your life. They impact your nervous system and the way that you go through. Like, so much of my life has been impacted in one way or another, starting with my birth.
Yes.
And that's why, like, the shame that I carried for what happened with my daughter, it was horrible. You know, I've talked to women, especially sharing my story recently. I've talked to women who had their children 30 years ago and they still feel ashamed.
Yes.
They still feel ashamed for what happened to them. Imagine carrying that shame for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, I've done the work around it now. I've had my healing birth, but a lot of people don't have that opportunity. They don't go on to have another baby, or they have the back-to-back cesareans, or so many different things can happen. And it's just, yeah, it's not conducive to happiness and women feeling powerful and capable. And that's what the world needs. The world needs, oh God, we need more feminine. We need it. It's time. It is time for the feminine to rise. And, you know, reclaiming birth, so many people told me it just doesn't matter in a healthy baby. And even in my recent conversations after my first birth, and it's like, you know what? You're wrong. You're right. It matters. It matters so, so much. It matters so much. Like, it heals, changes the world.
It really does. And it does produce women who know their power and who are really, you know, will not be spoken down to, infantilized, and will be lionesses, you know, will be powerful mothers. So birth does very much matter for the health and well-being of our communities, our world, humans, future generation, women, everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I agree.
Thank you so much, Lauren, for coming and sharing your birth stories. It's been such a pleasure having you on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is my second time sharing this story in this much detail publicly, and it's just very cathartic for me. And if people can listen, other women can listen and draw support or a word of encouragement, it's only sometimes one or two things that stick out when you're in that experience of labor and when you're going through that period of thinking, I can't do this. Like, sometimes just the right word or phrase or something that you've heard along the way will be that little bit of extra support and power that you need. So maybe something that I said resonated, or I don't know. I hope that anybody listening just takes this story to heart and realizes how incredible it can be.
I love what you said about choosing the pain now instead of the pain of choosing medical intervention and pain relief that might cause that. Because that's a piece of wisdom that I think is very, very accurate and true.
Yeah, helped me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it, leave a review, or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.